Now, the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome, everyone, to the Wednesday edition, the post-election day edition of the Three Martini Lunch. Conveniently, Jim Garrity of National Review is not here today. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Ian Tuttle of National Review is here in Jim's place. Ian, you were not here for predictions yesterday. Jim and I gave out our Electoral College predictions, our balance of power in the Senate predictions, and our balance of power in the House predictions. I got to say, we're pretty darn close with that House prediction. The rest of it was way off. We weren't the only ones, obviously. Jim had Hillary north of 323 electoral votes. The only thing I had different was I had Trump winning Florida, but I still had him losing. Obviously, that's not the case. It was late in the early morning, I guess. It wasn't late in the evening. It was late in the early morning. We thought it was going to go longer because John Podesta came to Hillary's what was supposed to be a victory party and said, we're not going to do anything tonight. But then just a short time later, Hillary called Donald Trump, and we got this.
I've just received a call from Secretary Clinton. She congratulated us, it's about us, on our victory. And I congratulated her and her family on a very, very hard-fought campaign.
Donald J. Trump is the president-elect of the United States of America. He won virtually all of the key battleground states. He won Florida. He won North Carolina. He came very close in Virginia, but ultimately lost that to Hillary Clinton. He won Pennsylvania, which has not gone Republican since 1988. He won Wisconsin, which has not gone Republican since 1984. He may still win Michigan. That hasn't been called yet. That hasn't gone Republican since 1988. He could still potentially win New Hampshire, so he could actually finish north of 300 electoral votes, but no matter which different count you look at, because different counts have different states called and not called, he is the president-elect. Hillary has admitted it now. President Obama has admitted it. Trump will be at the White House tomorrow to meet with him. Ian, it's amazing. Of all the things that happened in 2016, this is the 2016-iest, to be sure. And we'll talk about the congressional races a little bit later, but Donald Trump, with virtually no formal turnout operation, got massive turnout in red parts of those battleground states. He got it done, and he either just simply believed or somehow he knew that there was this palpable anger that could drive out voters who hadn't shown up in previous years. Maybe some of them were even Democrats. And Donald Trump deserves congratulations. He's the president-elect of the United States.
It's absolutely stunning. What to say? This is almost without question the political upset of American history. I mean, this is Truman Dewey on a larger scale. I mean, it's extraordinary. There are a couple things as far as how this happened that are worth pointing out. And of course, we'll be trying to figure out exactly how this happened for a long, long time. There'll be many books to be written. But first of all, he did recognize something deep happening within the American electorate that most observers just either didn't recognize at all or failed to recognize how deep it ran. I think, you know, on the left, Bernie Sanders understood this as well. I don't think that, you know, Trump ever had sort of a full consciousness of what was happening, but he had a gut instinct for it. And what we've sort of discovered through this whole cycle was that he has a good gut instinct for figuring out where the people are. The second is he benefited from arguably the worst candidate in modern American presidential history in Hillary Clinton. No one understood just how deeply despised she was by the American people. You know, we've talked about how she's been in our faces for 20 years and the corruption and et cetera, et cetera. But there was a dual phenomenon. One was the appeal of Trump, which was, you know, unique and which fit a moment. And the other was the repulsiveness of Hillary Clinton. As far as the vote totals go, what's interesting looking at these states is we're already getting the narrative from the left of half the country is wildly racist or half the country is sexist, et cetera, et cetera. Obviously, that's nonsense. What is so interesting is the way in which Trump reshuffled the electoral map. And again, part of that's dissatisfaction with Hillary. But you look at a place like Pennsylvania. There are whole counties that went for Obama overwhelmingly in 2012 that broke for Trump in 2016. There are similar pockets in Ohio. We'll probably discover pockets like this in you know, Wisconsin and some of these other states. It's pretty hard to make the case that there's rampant bigotry in the white working class when people who voted by 20 points for Obama in 2012 broke for Donald Trump in 2016. There's a deep-seated anger across the country with the status quo, and that's both the long-term status quo, this anti-Washington, you know, anti-establishment impulse that we've been talking about, which I think is true at the presidential level, but doesn't seem to extend down the ballot. But also a deep-seated frustration with the last 8 years specifically and the Obama legacy. This is the Obama legacy. Obamacare, the sort of shove down your throat, progressive, social agenda, all of that was on the ballot last night and was rebuked in just a stunning fashion. So I apologize for that being inchoate, but there are just so many different things at work here. And I think it'll be very, very interesting as we sort of start to separate these threads and figure out exactly what happened.
Yeah, you brought up a number of things. I think from the conservative perspective, obviously, just like the rest of the country, still a little bit stunned. But the focus now, of course, will be on focusing on the transition and what a Trump administration brings to Washington and the country. Also, from a conservative perspective, and certainly a good martini, as you pointed out, a repudiation narrowly in several states, but all in the same direction of the Obama agenda. And in the red states, the margins Trump racked up 30 points in Kentucky, 20 points in Indiana, 37, I think it was, in Oklahoma. He ended up winning Texas by 10, which is closer than most Republicans, but a lot bigger than the latest polls were showing. Just amazing on a number of different levels. I think Steve Hayes over at the Weekly Standard, who is no Donald Trump fan, as you well know, said it well this morning, and I think there's a lot to this. He said in 2006 and 2008, the voters switched things over to the Democrats after the handling of Katrina, and they were frustrated and tired of the Iraq War. And then after they saw what Democratic control in Washington brought, they said, no, we don't want that much government. So they gave the Republicans back the House in 2010, the Senate in 2014, and they still weren't happy with what they were seeing. And this was just a table pounding by the fist of the American voter that they are tired of what's going on in Washington. We'll see if what they're seeing in Washington changes dramatically. But if you're looking for someone who's not like everybody else in Washington, that's what they're going to get.
Yeah, I mean, and let's just sort of put it right on the table. Frankly, I mean, this was a wave election, yeah, which is extraordinary. I mean, this was what did Obama call 2014, a shellacking? I mean, that's the way this was, and it shouldn't have been. You know, we were on pins and needles about all of these Senate races, et cetera, and almost all of them went for Republicans. The House losses were minimal. They picked up state legislatures. They picked up governor's mansions, including in Vermont. There's now a Republican governor in, you know, Bernie Sanders stan. I mean, this is it just across the board an astonishing night for Republicans and what I think, you know, 95% of people thought would be a Democratic victory romp.
Most people expected that. We even talked about that in some of the martinis earlier on. As we shift to our second martini, let's talk about that. Yesterday, I said the Republicans, I predicted they would hold at 51-49. Jim said it would be 50-50. It's going to be at least 52-48. It could be 53-47 if Kelly Ayotte is able to actually win that seat. The only one that the Republicans have lost for sure was Mark Kirk in Illinois, and that was almost a given. The ones that everybody thought were in trouble, Ayotte among them, and she's still in limbo, basically. Pat Toomey found a way to win. Roy Blunt found a way to win. Richard Burr, pretty comfortably. Rubio, comfortably. Joe Heck was a disappointment. You almost have to think that Nevada is effectively a blue state at this point. But, you know, we talked so long, Ian, about how Trump was a drag on these Senate candidates. I think in the case of Pat Toomey and Roy Blunt, for sure, and maybe Ron Johnson, possibly helping Richard Burr, although I think Burr and Johnson out outperform Trump, he actually was a help in a lot of these cases.
Yeah, I mean, we asked the wrong question throughout the whole cycle, which was what kind of drag is Trump going to be on the down ballot? In fact, it turns out that Hillary Clinton was the drag on the down ballot. at least it seems that way, and maybe just in the case of turnout, the enthusiasm for her just left people, you know, sitting at home. I'm not positive about that in the numbers. You will have to sort of run the numbers, but it really was stunning, not just for them to hold so many of these seats, including Johnson, who basically until yesterday morning, I mean, yesterday morning they were predicting he would lose to Feingold. But, you know, Todd Young in Indiana, not just winning, but winning early and easily. I mean, that race was called very, very quickly. That is enormously encouraging. I mean, one of the things that we have to, I think, reconsider is this question of, do we have a center-left or a center-right country? And there, you know, we talked for a long time about, oh, we have a center-right country, and then we had 8 years of Obama and Democratic majorities, and now what you have, just looking at the national state of the Republican Party, is so extraordinary. You have to think, okay, maybe we do have that center-right country. You know, it's a different right than we might have thought. You know, it's not the right of maybe Reagan limited government conservatism, but it's a sort of, as my colleague Ramesh has said, sort of a nationalist working class right. That seems to very likely be the case. Additionally, the Senate is going to make, I mean, it would have been enormously important in a Clinton administration, needless to say, but it's just going to be massively important for Donald Trump, because it's going to facilitate a Supreme Court pick. It's going to facilitate the type of legislation and just the general sort of policy orientation led by Mitch McConnell that could really be productive. You know, this is a Senate that could repeal Obamacare. This is a Senate that could do, you know, X, Y, Z. I mean, it's hard to overstate how important it is for that Republicans held it.
And they hold the House comfortably, and conservatives, as they come to grips, they'll also come to grips with the fact that Hillary Clinton will never be president of the United States. And I think there are a lot of people who were resigned to that fact less than 24 hours ago, and now she will depart the scene. And Barack Obama is out of office now in just over 2 months. As we move on to our third martini, there were a lot of people, just like the rest of us, on cable news last night who was kind of assumed going in that it would be Hillary Clinton's night. Obviously, it was not. And so I've got a couple of clips of realizing this kind of in the moment, as well as reaction to the inevitability as the numbers came in places like Pennsylvania, Wisconsin, and so forth. First of all, this is MSNBC. Steve Kornacki is breaking things down about how the path is getting easier for Trump. And this is off camera, so I don't know if this is Brian Williams or Chris Matthews, but here you go.
He can get one out of Maine. He'd sit there at 256. If he wins New Hampshire, you get four out of New Hampshire. He'd be sitting there at 260. And then again, you take a look at what's left on this map, and you would need... you would need Wisconsin. Wisconsin would put him over. Wisconsin would put him at 270 at that point.
Jeez.
All right. Jeez. I think that was Matthews. Over on CNN, I don't think at this point Hillary had conceded yet, but Van Jones was already doing his post-game analysis, and he decided this really boiled down to race.
This was a white lash against a changing country. It was a white lash against a black president in part. And that's the part where the pain comes.
And the pain also apparently comes on the most important meal of the day. He says parents today are afraid of breakfast.
You have people putting children to bed tonight, and they're afraid of breakfast. They're afraid of, how do I explain this to my children? I have Muslim friends who are texting me tonight saying, should I leave the country? I have families of immigrants that are terrified tonight.
And for the coup de grace, Rachel Maddow from MSNBC.
You're awake, by the way. You're not having a terrible, terrible dream. Also, you're not dead and you haven't gone to hell. This is your life now. This is our election now. This is us. This is our country. It's real.
Ian, everybody's stunned, but watching the tears of the left as this unfolded was also a pretty nice silver lining Tuesday.
This is some of the most glorious Schadenfreude that we've ever experienced. And part of what's so enjoyable about it is the unthinking quality to it still. This is a mainstream media that was thrilled, was overjoyed when Donald Trump won the primary, won the Republican primary last summer. They have been talking about, you know, the GOP civil war and the death of the Republican Party and all of this, and they were thrilled to give him, you know, $2 billion in free media, et cetera, in the hopes that he would be the end of the GOP in the United States. And this is a very bitter fruit that they're now reaping. Additionally, I think one of the things that struck a lot of commentators, and which is true and stunning, is it's not just the ascendancy of the Republican Party to unified government across both House and Senate, with the White House and likely a conservative majority on the court. It's the complete devastation of a Democratic Party from the very top to the very bottom. I mean, this is a party that is just in absolute shambles. Barack Obama has been an atom bomb on his own party. I think a lot of people sort of woke up to that reality last night. One of the things that a lot of these people, and this goes for us as well, as for, you know, from a different point of view, those of us on the right who never expected this outcome, is going to be doing a lot of serious introspection and thinking about the way in which they were just deeply, deeply out of touch with the country. That'll be an important move as we go forward. But for the moment, the tears are pretty tasty.
And kudos to John King on CNN. I was watching him a little bit earlier today. He's their big data cruncher, if you watch them at all, on election night. And he basically said the media is out of touch. The media is out of touch. Washington is not America, I think is the phrase he used. And he admitted that whether it's the polling, the exit polling, the kind of pundits all just kind of talking to each other, they just missed this. The pollsters missed it, and even those of us in the podcast world and beyond certainly missed it. It's an interesting time for Republicans, though. Obviously, as we've talked about, Ian, a great opportunity to accomplish some important things and things that the American people have been pining for a long time. I just remember, though, that the last time Republicans had the White House and dominant numbers in the House and Senate was 2005 to 2007, and that led to some not so good things as a result of not taking advantage of the opportunity and being responsive to what people wanted. So the opportunity's there, but there are dangers as well.
Yeah, that's exactly right. I mean, no one knows what's going to happen going forward, and anybody who does is lying to you. But I think what's going to be very important for conservatives, that is, you know, sort of principled conservatives who've been skeptical about this entire Trumpian Trump phenomenon, is to do essentially what I think our editors at NR this morning suggested, which is to be cautiously hopeful, to push a President Trump and his cabinet and his Congress toward conservative policies and that are in line with conservative principles, and then to try and check him and ding him whenever he veers away from that. You know, it really does feel like some sort of something new under the sun. And I think conservatives are in an odd position. They're not in exile. They're also not in power. So there'll be an important voice in sort of a gray area for a while as we figure out what the next 4 years are going to look like.
Utterly fascinating that this is how the 2016 campaign came to a close. Ian, you've been here on all the bewildering days, it seems like, or at least many of them throughout this campaign. And I guess we saved the most bewildering for last. Thanks for your time today, as always.
Thank you, Greg.
Ian Tuttle of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Thanks for being with us today. David French will be in for Jim tomorrow. Join us on Thursday for the next 3 Martini Lunch.